You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
Okay, hey, it's Sunday, September 16th, 2012, and this is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. I'm your host, Dean Esme, author of Methuselah's Daughter and DeanEsme.com, along with Typhon Blue of Genderatic.com.
Greetings, minions.
And Alex Heberling of Alex'sGuide.net.
Woo!
Thank you, Alex. Our top stories this week, Kickstarter and Indiegogo appear to have some new competition in the webcomics world. Iverse Media, a Texas-based company known for its digital app Comics Plus, has entered the world of crowdsourcing, and unlike its better-known competitors, it is concentrating on helping comics creators specifically. So if you've been thinking about using crowdsourcing to get your own comics endeavor off the ground, this may be a new way of doing it that you want to investigate, one that doesn't have you competing for attention with non-comics-related projects for funding. More information is available at publishersweekly.com and also at comicsaccelerator.com, which you'll find both are in the show notes. Also, Amazon has launched its first graphic novel and will pay you to read it. If you haven't already heard, Amazon.com has started its own publishing house known as Amazon Studios. And Amazon Studios has recently stepped its toe into the comics medium, launching his own first graphic novel titled Blackburn Burrow, a horror story told during America's Great Civil War period, which would be about the 1860s. What's more, if you read it and write a review, Amazon will give you a $5 gift certificate, meaning they are essentially paying you to check out and review their first entry in the graphic novel arena. It's certainly an interesting business approach. We don't know how good Blackburn Burrow will be, but the fact that they'll pay you to read it may make us interested enough to check it out, and we thought you might feel the same. For more on this book and this unusual marketing strategy, see the link to comicsbeat.com in the show notes. I'm going to have to cut that out. That's it for our top stories this week. Now over to The Buzz with Typhon Blue.
Hi, this is Typhon with The Buzz. Former Marvel COO Bill Jamis tells us how to wake the fuck up. Via Comics Beat, we have an interesting interview this week with former Marvel executive Bill Jamis, one of the forces behind Marvel's early 2000 reinvention known as Ultimization. Nowadays, he's involved with Zenoscope Entertainment's digital era Transverse Universe and directly working on a new project called Wake the Fuck Up. Wake the Fuck Up is a riff on the popular Go the Fuck to Sleep hit that went viral last year with parents screaming at their children to go to sleep, read by Samuel L. Jackson. This crossover print digital project takes that mentality and looks at it from the perspective of kids growing up in today's world, especially teens who often experience the other end of that go to sleep stuff with screams from their parents that they need to wake up and grow up, and just what kind of world we're leaving to them to wake up to. The interview is interesting, and the project, slated for release digitally and in print in October, looks even more interesting. See the link to comicsbeat.com in the show notes for more. Amanda Palmer can't afford to pay her backup band. Those of us who are creative types often, rightly or wrongly, feel like producers, publishers, and other corporate entities take advantage of our creativity to make money for themselves, while the artist often works for pennies or almost nothing at all. Whether that's always a fair complaint or not, it's hard not to note the irony when a creator herself appears to do the same thing. Musician Amanda Palmer, fresh off a massively successful Kickstarter campaign to fund her recent project, is now asking volunteer musicians to work for free for her in her stage shows, suggesting that just the exposure and experience of working for her in public will benefit them. This has, unsurprisingly, caused a few raised eyebrows and objections. Is creativity just a disposable commodity, even to other creators? Some people think so, at least in Amanda Palmier's case. Of course, in her case, she's also not paying, so it's not really a commodity, it's just disposable. For more details, see the link to prefixmag.com in the show notes. And that's the buzz. Back to you, Dean.
Thank you, Typhon. Now for our business segment, we will move over to Alex. Alex, take it away.
All right, this week in business, we have two items. First up, comics in Japan have long been a respected art form for adults, and we had to remind ourselves of that when we first read the headline on this story saying, Viz Media debuts mature manga series. For whatever reason, mature often seems like code for porn here in America, but in this case, that appears not to be the case at all. Instead, Viz Media is releasing 9 translations of genuinely sophisticated and in-depth comic stories aimed at and marketed toward an adult audience, i.e. mature and not for kids. Titles include Tenjo Tengi, a story of street fighters who under a serious martial arts training world, Nana Volume 1, the story of two young women making their way through life in Tokyo, Jormungand, the story of a child soldier, Ikigami, a dystopian future story, The Kane Saga, a mystery series, and more. For more on these newly translated titles aimed at grown-ups, see the link to viz.com in the show notes. And lastly, in business, many comics geeks love the series and are interested in the work of director Ridley Scott, famed for his creation of the Alien franchise. You probably heard about the mixed review, some loved it and some hated it, the Prometheus film he released this year got. Whether you liked it or hated it, they're doing something interesting with the release of the film for home viewing. According to Geek News on MTV, Fox Studios will be releasing the film in digital streaming format before releasing it on Blu-ray or DVD. Whether you loved, hated, or were indifferent to this blockbuster, this may mark the first time a major Hollywood production has gone straight to streaming format rather than on disc. This bears close watching, as it may be a sign of where things are going in the future. See the link to geek-news.mtv.com in the show notes for more details. And back to you, Dean.
Thank you, Alex. In our education section this week, we have a couple of interesting items. If you're interested in the way finished comics and other books get run through the traditional publishing process on paper and through traditional marketing and distribution, you'll want to check out this interesting article from firstsecondbooks.com, which explains the whys and hows of a finished creative work going from being turned in ready for publication and the often agonizing wait to see it actually finally in newsstands and on bookstore shelves and available online. Yes, even in today's lightning-fast digital age, it can take longer than you think after you've finished a project before it actually gets released by the publishers. Check out the link to firstsecondbooks.com in the show notes for more on that interesting article. Also, on the subject of women in comics, we have an item titled Before Women Write About Comics, Girls Read Them. On the frequently discussed subject of women in comics, WomenWriteAboutComics.com has an interview with British Kids Comics author Jo Bevan and her Bring Back Bunty campaign. Bunty is probably not known very well outside the United Kingdom, but was once an extremely popular comic with boys and girls in the UK, but died out back in the 90s. Bevan explains that she doesn't necessarily just want to bring back Bunty, but rather to bring back more comics like it that are aimed at girls, and parenthetically boys, of a young age, so kids will develop an interest in comics again, because she thinks there just aren't any good comics for young kids anymore. And while she's working to change that, she'd like to see others do so as well. And maybe we can emulate that here in North America? Check out the link to WomenWriteAboutComics.com in the show notes for more. That's the end of our education segment this week. Now for our tech segment, over to you, Alex.
Hey, this week in tech, we've got soon you'll be able to print your book at Walgreens. Ever want to print your own book, or comic book for that matter? For some time now, you've been able to go to copy shops like FedEx and other local print shops to get that done. But now, believe it or not, the giant drugstore chain Walgreens has entered this arena. Why go to Walgreens to print out your book rather than current locations? Well, because depending on where you live, there may be a Walgreens nearer to you than anything else. Clearly, this signals a rising trend in individual creator material being more and more easily printed and distributed. Check out the link in the show notes to comicspeak.com for more information on the drugstore giant's plans in this regard. And on an amusing note, the world's most popular and arguably the worst online domain name and web hosting service, GoDaddy, suffered a massive service interruption recently, causing a number of people who both use and hate GoDaddy to rant about the service's slick marketing, terrible software, and terrible customer service. What's this got to do with webcomics? Not much, except that many webcomics depend on GoDaddy to reach their audience. Plus, we just think this is funny. For more, see the link to Boing Boing in the show notes. And that is it for tech.
Thank you, Alex. Now for our tidbits section, we once again feature Typhon Blue.
Decent men, women, and children everywhere are, we think, rightly horrified at the sight of that third most disgusting organ, right under lawyers, the human nipple. The New Yorker, a respectable highbrow magazine that has been published since 1925, recently published a simple black and white cartoon showing Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and had the audacity to include two little black dots representing Eve's nipples, causing Facebook to ban the New Yorker's cartoon, quite rightly. The incident, now dubbed as Nipplegate, has caused much ridicule to be heaped on Facebook's head, but we here at Webcomic Speak and want it to be known that all right-thinking people should commend Facebook for protecting the world from two black dots. Now, on to end the sinister excesses of the three black dots of the ellipses. Dot, dot, dot. Please see the link to NewYorker.com in the show notes for more. If you are a big fan of the Katamari Damacy video games that were all the rage a few years ago, you might find this interesting. A new webcomic based on the Katamari franchise has been released via Shifty Look Webcomics Portal. Will the Katamari universe be able to create a sustained, enduring webcomic that draws millions of fans like the video game series? Or will people just scratch their heads and wonder why anyone would be interested in a comic based on a cute but simple game that was all the rage years ago but almost no one plays anymore? Only time will tell, but the series launches on September 17th, and you can learn more about it and check it out yourself at the link to comicsbeat.com in the show notes. That's the tidbits. Now back to Alex with the oddities.
All right, this week in oddities. First up, a London movie theater hires volunteer ninjas to deter rude patrons. Honestly, do you need to know more than the headline? We'll give you a little more. A London movie theater is using black-clad, near-invisible ninjas to sneak up on people who talk or text or use cell phones in the theater to suggest they quiet down. That sure sounds like a theater we'd like to go to. For more, you can see the links to geeksofdoom.com in the show notes. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Comicsbeat.com has blown the lid off the mind-blowing, unbelievable idea that Marvel plans to kill off Professor Xavier in an upcoming issue of X-Men. Oh, noes! That can't possibly be! What will we do without Professor X? As everyone knows, Marvel never kills off a popular character, and when they do, they never come back, right? We're sure you're all as torn up about this horrible, tragic news as we are. But have hope, America. There is some possibility that he won't stay dead. Surely not, for dead is dead, you say. But as UncannyXMen.net reveals, Marvel, like DC, has a long, long history of killing characters who amazingly wind up coming back to life, or not really being dead after all. No, really, seriously, they do. So, if you were shocked and horrified at the news of Professor X's imminent doom, you may want to cancel your own suicide plans and check out the story at comicspeak.com and the link to UncannyXMen.com in the show notes to see why old Charles may just live after all. We are all very relieved here at Webcomic Beacon, I assure you. And just for those of you keeping score, there is also a list of every X-Men death and resurrection over on UncannyXMen.com. It is a very long list. And that is it for oddities.
Thank you very much, Alex. Thank you very much, Typhon. All right, everybody, we're going to go into our break segment. Please stick around and for our discussion segment.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio. an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
And, oh, mine going blank.
Nipples. And, black dots. Wieners. And,
shut up. And we're back from our break. Thank you for sticking with us. In our discussion, we will continue on with Typhon Blue, our friend Alex, and Fess of Webcomics Speakin' will be joining us. Hi, Fess.
Hello.
All right.
What do we want to talk about first? I think I know what I want to talk about first. I want to talk about nipples.
We know, Dean. We know.
Yeah.
We all want to talk about nipples, dude.
Pretty much. Did you guys see the cartoon?
I have seen the cartoon, and let me look at the cartoon so I can recapture my response to how ridiculous it is.
I think you just want to stare at the nipples some more.
Yeah, but which set? There are two sets, and only one created the consternation, the gnashing of teeth, the fainting, and the need for smelling salts. And there are four dots there. Why only two? Why only two? Why?
Well, maybe they pulled it because of the dots on Adam's chest. Did you ever think of that? Huh? Huh? That could be.
Yeah, it could be.
I have no idea what Facebook was thinking here. I mean, literally anybody who goes and looks at that, what is wrong with them? But I take it that both of you ladies needed a swooning couch to fall over onto.
Oh, definitely. I had to swoon from my apathy, actually. I was so apathetic in response to the comment that I was like, husband, take me to the chase.
Let me tell you guys, if I was wearing pearls, I would be clutching them. But since I'm not, I will have to clutch the jewels on my shirt.
Oh my.
Dazzler to your chest. Oh my.
All right. So any ladies that are listening, you know, now don't go to that New Yorker link because you might be harmed and your children might be harmed by it too. Good on Facebook.
Okay, yeah. just a second. Am I wrong to believe that this does not actually, like, all my life, two dots, like two black dots looks nothing like what I see in the morning every day? So
won't somebody think of the children, please? Yeah. I mean, they could see these dots and get the wrong ideas about things, and then they'll just end up murdering people, I'm sure.
You know, rape and murder is just around the corner for any child. Yeah.
And it all starts with two black dots.
It's sinister. You know, that is the gateway drawing to murder. This is what it is. It is the gateway drawing to serial killing. You start with this.
And rape. Don't forget rape.
And this, and you slowly, or even quickly, go down that slippery slope to living in a basement with a pool of blood.
Slippery nipples. I'm sorry, I didn't say that. All right.
And there goes the rating for this episode.
I'm going to get the explicit tag.
All right. I think we probably said all there is to say about that ridiculous story. Somebody alert, what's his name? Mark Zuckerberg, that his company is acting like an idiot. Moving on, I was a little more interested in the Amanda Palmer case. I can't decide what I think. So somebody tell me what to think of Amanda Palmer wanting volunteer musicians to come play her gigs for free.
Okay, well, I saw this. This is one I actually submitted to Jason to put in because I saw it somewhere. I totally forgot. But it's, yeah, Amanda Palmer is on this tour, and she's basically asking fans, musician fans of hers, if they want to basically volunteer their time and effort into performing with her as she, I guess she goes from, city to city, and then people from around there would come and be the band for her performances. and she doesn't pay them. Now, I had posted a couple of things on Tumblr about, don't work for free sort of stuff. And people have seen that all around. And that's true. You really, really shouldn't work for free. Because it demeans, the whole, like all musicians that, if people can get work for free, then the overall cost or the potential that a musician could earn can potentially go down. But here is the other flip side. These are fans. They want to. This is like an awesome chance to hang out with their one of their idols. If you were a musician and you could arrange to play with your favorite band that came to town,
the Rolling Stones or whatever.
Well, you're old, but.
Yeah, I am.
So, but no, it's something like that. You don't want to, you typically don't want to work for exposure or just simply exposure. You should get paid for your work. But then again, I would argue that there are times in which, don't join those sort of like, crowdsourced, hey, everybody submit a comic idea and then we'll pick the best one. And then we'll give that one a modest pay and what
also known as working on spec.
Working on spec. And I did post a video about that, and I'll try to find that video and I'll put it in the show notes. That is entirely pointless. It can help a little bit of your own exposure, but it is a lot of time and effort to exude your effort. It's a lot to put all that effort into that something for nominal sort of exposure. Now, when you got someone like Amanda Palmer and you're a fan of them, and this is, it's almost like an opportunity. Now, that sort of exposure is kind of priceless. Like, granted, she probably, with how much she raised, she probably could. Really, technically, I believe she could afford to pay them with the people that are going there. But this is also individual musicians' effort. They want to do this. This is an opportunity for them to play with their biggest fans. So, and that's up to them, and that's very direct. And I think there's something to say as well about that. So I'm done with my opinion on this. I'll turn it over to other people.
I'm just curious why she couldn't have included a honoraria or I'm not exactly sure how this works for musicians in her Kickstarter campaign.
That's a interesting thought. I mean, I go back and forth on this as a writer, right? I do a lot of writing. A lot of that writing has been for pay. Some of it's for free just because I'm passionate and want to do it. So part of it is like when someone tells me don't work for free, I'm like, so you don't want me, you want to tell me what I do for fun, right? I go back and forth, right? I don't know what the answer is. It does seem weird that somebody like Amanda Palmer, who's had some successful albums and got all that money, is saying, I'm not even going to give you $100. You just get to bask in my glow. I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem I had with it, too. I mean, on the other hand, most people are, sort of like clients or whatnot, if you're like a freelancer, when they say, oh, but it'll be great exposure. Admittedly, playing with Amanda Palmer would be good exposure to some extent. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when was the last time you went to a concert of a singer that you like and you're like, hey, that keyboard player was pretty awesome. I wonder who he was. On the other hand, the keyboard player. Well, shut up, Fess. I'm not finished yet. On the other hand, that keyboard player, that dulcimer player or whatever, putting played with Amanda Palmer on your resume, that is a pretty big deal. Which I can definitely see some value in being able to put that on in a professional resume, and it can open up some doors and windows in the future. But at the same time, Amanda, if you can't afford to pay your backup band, then you shouldn't get a backup band. You've been doing this long enough that that's not cool.
And what do you think, Typhon?
Well, I think it's a matter of artistic integrity. I assume that she wants artists to be paid. She certainly wants to be paid, no doubt. And, I mean, asking somebody to do their art, if they want to approach it as a business for free, it's sort of a breach of that kind of integrity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if it's a situation in which she doesn't have the money and they're all in it together, that's another thing. But she put this Kickstarter campaign out. She could have requested an honoraria, like enough to cover at least some of what they could expect to get. And she didn't. She didn't think of it. So it's not just – maybe she did and she excluded it. It's not just that she didn't have the money. She also apparently didn't ask for it either or didn't think of it.
I will say this in her defense. It's sort of playing devil's advocate because it certainly doesn't sit quite right with me either. This isn't a jam session with a bunch of people. This is, you know, I need musicians, come play. But – here's the thing, you know, I've read some articles about what people in the music industry, especially like the big music publishers, and this is probably the same for books too, you know, for every album sale, the artist may only see 50 cents of it. And, you know, you get your $10 disc or your 10 iTunes downloads or whatever, you may get 5% of that, you may get 50 cents or whatever. And then you're paying your manager, you're paying your producers, you're paying your legal staff, you're paying your musicians, you're paying a whole bunch of stuff that actually comes right out of your pocket. It turns out to be not even all that uncommon. Not many people know this, but I'm sure it's very similar in publishing. You will have artists with a million-selling one-hit wonder hit record who, by the time they are done, are actually owing money and have to declare bankruptcy after a hit record because they had to shell out so much money for lawyers and other expenditures out of the 5 or 10% royalty that they got. So it's really possible that she's not lying when she says she doesn't have any money. It is possible. She says she doesn't have any, but it doesn't look good. Amanda, if you're listening, which I'm sure she is, because we all know she's a big comics geek, right? But it just doesn't look good. Dude, $100, whatever. I don't know.
It's the principle. It's the principle of the thing.
Yeah.
Respecting your fellow artists.
Exactly. Exactly.
I just have a question about this issue. She went on a Kickstarter campaign, right? To raise funds.
Yeah.
So
and she got, in fact, let me go ahead.
There's like $1.2 million or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of travel costs in here. And if she's doing something without the record label, which she might be, I mean, there's a lot of people doing that these days that they're doing things on their own. Look at OK Go, for crying out loud, of how successful mm-hmm. they got. And they're not using them. They have a contract basically just for distribution. They're essentially producing all of their own work. As far as I understand, I'm not entirely sure on that, but still there's a lot of people that like independent people that are going out there and putting stuff out themselves, self-publishing. And this is, you know, it's a sort of, but there is the realization once you go grand scale, there are a lot more factors to consider, especially if you're putting on a show, you got to rent the venue, you got to pay insurance. You also got to travel to there. You got to pay the lights, the people that set up the lights. And, you know, there are a lot of other costs. She doesn't just have that $1.2 million as her profit. There's a lot of costs involved. But yes, doesn't just say it if you want to have something to say.
Well, I don't want to interrupt anyone.
Go.
That's what we do here, interrupt. Okay, all right, because I just do that so that you have a heads up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but here's the thing. Yes, all of this is expensive, and I'm not saying anything about the amount she raised. But the fact is, she set that amount. She knew she was going to need a backup band, and she did not include the cost of paying a backup band in the amount that she set. She asked for.
What's doubly weird is I'm looking at the story on time.com right now. We might have to put this in the show notes. She asked for $100,000 on her Kickstarter. She got over $1 million. That just doesn't look good. She got 10 times what she said she needed. So what are you doing with your money, Amanda?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, I think the basic rule of thumb here is if you are going to work for free, know what that's going to actually cost you.
Yes.
It's going to cost you time.
Yes.
And that might even cost you some of your own money. Now, like Alex was saying, now it might be different between the music world and the comic world, of course. You know, being able to put, you know, that on your resume, or just being able to work directly with your somebody you idolize. You know, that's a cost, that cost factor that you're just going to have to evaluate for yourself, really.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm not sure make what else we could
make good choices, folks.
Typhon, just jump in. Jump in.
Jump in. She's being too polite. She's everybody just listen. We keep getting little texts from Typhon. I have something to say. You don't have to do that, Typhon. Just be rude.
Well, the thing is, I'm used to doing this live, and you have to fill up dead space when you do it live. So I just, and I'm also used to doing it live with two people who never stop talking.
Mm. But anyway, what do you want to say?
I love you guys. I love you if you're listening. But yeah, sure. I'll just run right over all of you if you like.
Go ahead. What did you want to say?
Oh no, I'm done. I'm just saying that if you are asking for money, include all of your expenses and have the integrity to recognize that the artists deserve to get paid. And and frick, if you get 10 times the amount that you were expecting, how could you not be able to pay a backup band? Right. It's absolutely absurd. It's
somebody
absurd.
Somebody in our accounting department needs to be fired, maybe.
Yeah.
All right, so we also talk. What I also wanted to talk about this whole wake the fuck up thing, because
I'm actually
really
going to cut in and say goodbye for this week since I have to get going.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Everybody, that was Alex Heberling of alexsguide.net. Thank you very much for joining us this week, Alex.
No problem. I will see you all very soon. Bye bye.
All right, and now Typhon, Bess, and I will keep talking. And I'm curious to know whether either one of you took a good look at that wake the fuck up thing, because when I looked at it, I at first I thought this is dumb, and then it kind of started to hit home with me. So I don't know if either of you got a chance to look at it or not.
The actual original text.
There's a short comic about it online right now. I'm going to take the answer to my question is no. Okay. Has everybody seen Go the Fuck to Sleep, that video with Samuel L. Jackson?
I've seen parts of it. I mean,
I have.
I expected what was going to happen. I didn't need care to watch the whole thing.
Well, it was amusing. And as a parent, maybe I'm the only parent in the room, I found it extremely amusing. And it came out about a year ago, and it's Samuel L. Jackson reading from a book telling a little kid to go the fuck to sleep. Because every parent goes through that. You want the kids to go to sleep. They're 5 years old or 6 years old or 3 years old, and they won't go to bed. And you just want to watch your TV or have your Nookie or whatever, and it's very frustrating. And parents everywhere laugh. Now, wake the fuck up. It hasn't been released yet. They do have a short webcomic up now, which should be in the show notes, showing Wake the Fuck Up, which is teenagers, let's say age 14 to 18, 19 years old, on the opposite end of that, with their parents basically telling them, wake the fuck up, get out of bed, stop being a lazy bum, kid, which actually kind of hit home for me in one way, because I got a 14-year-old of my own, and we do have trouble getting him up out of bed. And if he's listening, he shouldn't be embarrassed, because now I remember being a teenager and going through that too, and how terrible I felt when my parents treated me that way, even though I had to get up and go to school and all that, but just how miserable I was with that. And then the whole thing starts going into, if you look at employment figures, a growing number of kids who are teenagers now can't find jobs. There are no jobs for them, not only because unemployment is high, but older people are taking their jobs. And actually, unemployment among young men in particular is really sky high. It's something like 25-30% for young boys, young men, you know, age 16 to 25. They have one of the highest unemployment demographics in the world, or in the country. And we
one
do
of
seem
the highest
to have
or the highest.
Well, actually, the last I looked at unemployment, the two groups that had the highest unemployment were young men and older men, which is something
that makes sense.
Most people don't know. But men, you know, males age 16 to 25 and males age 45 to 60 are at record high. Women are doing better. Women who choose to work have a lower unemployment rate, although it's bad everywhere. I'm not saying no woman's got a problem, but in looking at this wake the fuck up thing, it's concentrating on young people. And it's just struck me, we are yelling at our young kids, get up, get out of bed, work, go to school, do well so you can go out and get the job that isn't there that you probably can't drive to because you can't afford auto insurance. And we all live in suburbs where nobody can, you know, where there's no mass transit. And what kind of world are we bringing the kids up in? And it's really worth looking at, and I'm going to look forward to, I'm actually going to get that comic and probably give it to my kid.
I think this is a good point. I mean, wake the fuck up to what?
Yes. And that's exactly what if you go and look at the webcomic, I would encourage everybody listening to go check out. There is a webcomic at, let me find that note again. It's near the top, isn't it? Where is it? Well, it's on comicspeaks.com is the link, but let me pull it up here. And I will encourage people to look at it because I think two people need to look at this thing. Parents who have kids who are teenagers or might be teenagers, and teenagers.
Those bastards.
If you go to that comicspeak.com, there's a trailer for it because it's not out. There's a trailer. And if you follow the links, there's also a short webcomic. But then what they plan on doing is releasing a long graphic novel. It looks like in October, I think. That's going to be about the experience of these kids basically being kicked out of their house and trying to make their way in the modern world. It actually looks kind of grim and interesting. This is, you know, like a comic aimed at teens, but like, which is like the traditional audience for comics, right? Or at least used to be. But like, oh no, this is what your life really might look like. And doesn't look that pretty. So I don't know. I don't know what else I have to say about that.
Well, I can go somewhere a little tangential if you're interested.
Sure. What do you think?
Well, and this is going to be sort of an interesting, like, it's going to seem maybe off topic, but I remember reading a while back about a tribe in Africa, and they were basically hunter-gatherers. Mm-hmm. And what I found interesting about them is they never actually made their kids do anything. Their kids, when they were children, they would play, and they would, they would create like elaborate huts and pretend to be adults and do all the things that kids do. But what happened when they got to the time that they were teenagers is that for some reason, spontaneously, they just started to take up the duties of adulthood, and they were never pressed into it. And I just wonder, really, what was behind that? What was the impetus for them to do that? Because none of the adults were saying, okay, now it's time for you to learn how to cure meat and how to hunt and do all of this stuff. They just went through puberty, and then they started hanging around and you know, asking to be taught how to be an adult.
I need to ask, do they have any contact with, like, first world?
Minimal.
Okay, there's your answer. There's not all that much stimulus to do other things. I mean, they grow up in this environment. That's just what you do. There's another flip side to that, which they're probably doing adult things at, like, I think early teens versus late teens.
Well, actually, they would go. I'm pretty sure they would go through puberty later than us. So, in their early teens, I think they were still playing like children. But what happened? What was interesting to me is that something switched in their mind when they became an adult, and they said, "Okay, now I have to take responsibility for, you know, taking care of myself."
I think,
for getting food for others and doing the chores of the village.
I think it just boils down to there's not much competing interest as far as like for them to be, you know, lured by other things to do. And also they're growing up in this environment and then that's just what happens. The other thing, which I think is also important, is like in a lot of like first world societies, we retard our children to the fact that when they start feeling ready for more responsibility and treat me like an adult dad sort of thing, granted it might be a little, you know, snooty, but we keep suppressing them until they're like 18, you know. It's like we keep constricting those numbers. Well, you can't do anything until this. It's like you're living under my roof, my rules. It's like we got this sort of mentality here. It's that oh, you're not an adult yet until the law says you're an adult sort of thing. So there's plenty of fine, intelligent people that are like 14, 15, 16 that could, I would trust them to vote, you know, that sort of thing. Some really responsible young people out there, but you know, society just keeps pushing them down to this. Oh, you're not ready for this or that yet. You're not able to maturely handle it. And it's a bigger discussion than we can actually have time for this. And it's a lot of social analysis and whatnot, but, what were we talking about?
It's interesting to me because we're, you know, this is the first time I've seen in, you know, it goes back to comics. They're doing a comic about this. And, you know, I do think about it. I remember where I was at the age of 14 and there were jobs I could go get if I wanted to. And I did. Paper delivery. There was a local pizza shop down the road for me that I could do some work at. There were ways for me to go make my mowing lawns. Those jobs are gone in a lot of suburbia now. I mean, I live in a condo location, as does my son, where lawn work is done. He can't drive, and the only jobs he could get to, he would have to be driven to. Where is the natural progression into adulthood? Yet we beat down the kids, especially boys, in my opinion. I don't want to really, but I mean, I've even heard this phrase, failure to launch, and your 20-year-old loser who's still living at home. Where's he going to go, you know? Even if you do go to college these days, what, are you going to come out of there with a massive amount of debt? And then where's the job? But I still see people browbeating their kids, especially their boys, and calling them losers and telling them to man up and all that. And what? To what? You know, you hear all these complaints. The kids are playing on the internet and playing too many video games. And why aren't they maturing? Maturing to what?
There's a couple of factors in this, and they're not really political. It's just the way things are. We're living longer. We also had the financial crash. You know, our older generation has to work longer. So there's jobs that are just not opening up because people aren't leaving them. And also, ever since the crash and coming back, it's a lot of companies are basically not hiring. They're utilizing workforce agencies so they don't have to pay them other benefits because of this. So there's, you know, these big companies, they're not hiring full time. They're using temp workers, saving money that way. And so there's not been a lot of incentive. Well, this works, so they're not doing that sort of thing. And also the economy itself, it's not, some people have argued, it's not a recession anymore. The economy has simply shrunk. It's just smaller now. And it's the way our economy works. It's just nuts of how it's a circle. And it's like nobody can do anything without the next person in line doing something. And it just doesn't make sense for anything, which is why people want the government to step in, because that's sort of outside of the circle kind of. But then it's just a big freaking mess.
Well, part of the problem is that we need to have small business. We need to have new business models coming out, and government is literally killing them with regulation. And furthermore, government seems to want to support the things that are too big to fail, so to speak, but they don't create jobs. They gradually lose them. It's small businesses and new business models that create new jobs.
This may get us into a too political an argument, because some people would say it's the other way around and you need government more involved to fight the big corporations. I don't know, but I would definitely agree with you that, you know, the future has to be in small businesses. I don't think most people would think would argue with that because we're past those days.
The future is always in small business because small businesses are where new business models come out and where new jobs are created to service those business models. Big business does not create new business models. They just sustain. So they don't create new jobs. Not like new business ideas. Mm-hmm. So when the government and this isn't even a right-left issue. When the government creates regulations that are actively killing small business, they're killing the economy.
Right. And I don't think either the Democrats or the Republicans in the United States can be counted on to have a regulatory environment that benefits
I don't think either one of them can be counted on for anything. But speaking of which, you know, this is a great opportunity. I mean, it's like if you want to take advantage of small business, you know what you can do? You can go to webcastbeacon.com/advertise and sponsor one of your favorite shows today. You can sponsor an episode. You can help our small company grow into something where I can actually start paying people. And it would be awesome. So go ahead and check that out.
That's right. Sponsorship are the opportunities here. Help small business. But
create
anyway,
the economy.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Help
the
heal the economy.
Yeah. One of our greatest supporters has been, and I'm going to give them extra plug for this because they've been great in sponsoring a lot of episodes, especially the Webcomic Beacon newscast recently. And that it was Sean Granger, the writer for the graphic novel Family Bones, which is actually really good. And of course, at kingtractorpress.com, you can check out some of his currently still running webcomics. So you can check that out. And we thank him for his past support.
Say that again, kingtractorpress.com?
Yep, that's right.
Go and check that out. and otherwise, maybe we'll close out talking about this, but I'm going to encourage everybody again to go look at that, Wake the Fuck Up, because I looked at it and I got the sense of, the word is frisson, right? The French word. I just went like a shock went through me. Cause I'm like, this looks like what life really probably looks like for a 16-year-old right now. And I'm not real happy about what I see about myself as a parent in that. There's a real good video at that link. Watch the video. And I have a feeling this comic may, when it comes out in October, may make a big impact on a lot of people. So.
Yeah.
Does anybody have
it certainly spurred an interesting discussion.
Is there anything else anybody would like to talk about tonight? Or should we close up the show?
We can close up. I don't have anything.
Okay.
Do you have anything?
Not really. I suppose we could talk about the women in comics if Dean wants to.
I've got a few minutes for it.
Yeah. Go right ahead.
Well,
women in comics. We feature Typhon. You're new to the show, but we feature some segment on women in comics at least every two or three episodes, and I never know what to think about it because sometimes I think it's a little. Well, what do you think?
Well, to be honest, that what you featured here is not really women in comics; it's women complaining about comics.
okay.
And when I read it, the first thing that came to my mind is Dudette. There are all kinds of web comics out there that are appealing to children and young adults. Go find them. Go support them. They're small businesses and artists who deserve to be paid. And I don't really care about Bunty. That was my conclusion.
Well, no, that's fair. And sometimes it feels to me, I hope nobody gets mad at me, but sometimes it feels to me like when we focus on women in comics, it's like, given the digital world that we're in and the ability of anybody to draw if they want to, do women need some kind of special enabling these days? It's not 1970 anymore. Like, if you want more women in comics, why don't you go write and draw some? Yeah.
Yeah. Stop saying, okay, well, I want this, so you have to do it for me, and just go out and do it. Yeah, and it's like it's the entry level now is so low, the ability to the expense of getting an audience is just, you know, some quality and good writing now, and
it's kind of hard to really tell, you know, where that lies, because it's like if I've known anything in the past 5 years of doing the Webcomic Beacon, there are tons of female web cartoonists out there. I don't know if some of them are just, you know, happy where they're at and not trying for the bigger jobs, or maybe if the bigger jobs just aren't hiring women, DC, you know, just, you know,
or, well, you know what, at DC and Marvel,
no, DC purged. People? DC purged so many female creators when they rebooted, and that was a huge point of contention for a lot of readers, and they called them out at San Diego Comic-Con. They were, like, yelling, hire more women, you know, that sort of thing. It's like, there's some things that push back, but there are still ways that, you know, if you find a comic you like, or if you really specifically, for some reason, only want to read female creators, look for them. Give them money. Support them, share, you know, that sort of thing. There are things to do out there. There is a dichotomy with, like, the top publishers that are probably a little bit more male-centric or dominating as far as who they hire or what they perceive, what their audience is. We can talk about that nonstop. It comes down to, as readers, seek out and support, and creators, try to get out there a bit more, see who you can band with and such. I'm sure there's a lot of people that would support that. You know, it's...
Well, especially because if you're talking about DC and Marvel, what are you talking about there? 30 or 40 jobs? 50 for writers and artists? Seriously.
Depends on how many books they got.
And then you also have to create what I would refer to as schlock. I mean, this stuff is not going to be remembered.
Not necessarily. Look at Gail Simone is always brought up. She doesn't write schlock. I mean, she's a female writer. Just because you're going to work for them, there's not just female artists out there. There's also female writers, you know.
But the market that Marvel and DC is going for is essentially wish fulfillment, just like the romance novel market is wish fulfillment. And if you say that the comic book market is dominated by men, the literary, like the fiction market, is dominated by women. And the women's dominance over the fiction market is not even questioned. And they can do things like romance novels have to have a female name. A man cannot write a romance novel. If he does, he has to use a female pseudonym. And they could do things like that. And nobody ever says, well, wait a second. Why is it this way? Why aren't we making this more inclusive to men? Because, you know, and that's the thing with the comic book market. Yeah, maybe Marvel and DC want more male creators because male creators appeal to the dynamic that, or the demographic model. that is the proven model for them. They are pushing specific buttons.
I disagree with that. To me, Marvel and DC and many companies, it's like a condition that they have that they perceive that is what their target audience is, because they're not trying to do anything more than what the current audience is. It's like a lot of, like, toy companies that make fucking pink everything for girls because they say that's what girls want. No, that's what you've manipulated every parents to just habitually buy. And there's this great video of this little girl that was just ranting and raving about why is everything for girls pink and blah, blah, blah. It's like, totally, she understands it. It's this sort of perceived audience is because they're not trying to
why do they have to try?
Anybody who wants to sell a product to somebody needs to try. They're just kind of in this rut, this comfortable rut of not advertising to other people. If it's like,
yeah, but here's the thing.
Population is technically, I think, a majority of females out there. I think the male female population, I think there's 1% at least more of men out there. And
yeah, but it doesn't matter what the population
they're
is.
They're alienating an entire potential audience to expand their audience. Women read comics, but they're not making an effort to grab that market whatsoever.
Yeah, the thing is that they are a specific niche within a larger market.
No, they're not. They're superhero comics. That's not a niche. That is...
Well, technically, in my mind, that is, because I'm looking at it more from a literary perspective, that is like a genre. It's a genre in a larger genre of styles, independent, young adult, fantasy, science fiction. You know, and it's just something that appeals to men more, and that is their demographic. And you know what? Personally, I am not offended by that because I recognize that there are things that appeal to men more, and there are things that appeal to women more, and you know what? if it's problematic, like the thing is that there's some problematic stuff going on in romance novels too that we could drag out into the open and say, hey, what the hell? I mean, there's even studies that show that women who read romance novels have more trouble in their relationships because they have a very artificial, distorted idea of what a relationship is. That's fine, but if you want to have a particular appeal to a particular demographic, what's wrong with that?
I would think, are you actually doing something to help women if you feel that you have to empower them? In fact, are women empowered if you empower them?
I don't think this is about empowerment. It's just that I would like to have some, like, you know, especially if like some of my most of the comics that I'm reading now, like from DC and Marvel, are female leads. And it's like, you can only extend, a male can only extend so far into writing female characters.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with that completely.
But because it's a perspective.
You can turn that around and say that women can't write male characters. No, we're human beings.
To an extent, but I want more of
the essential kernel of humanity is in all of us.
True. But I'm not saying there's certain things that don't get written or brought up, not all the time, or the female perspective is a little bit different. And also just because of, it's not as much as the writing or that I'm talking about as much. It's also a matter of just equal opportunity. It's entirely skewed. And there are a lot of fantastic female creators out there in the independent and webcomics world. And it's like, why aren't these doing more professional gigs? There are some fantastic women in comics, and they're just not, they're like being passed over because they're not willing to take a chance, it seems.
This is what you do. You support the fantastic work out there, and you give Marvel and DC the finger, and you just walk away from them. And I guarantee enough people do this over enough generations, and they will disappear. And in 25 years, people will say, what's Marvel? What's DC? Well, maybe 50. They'll just disappear.
Yeah. I'll tell you what.
Build it if you want it, yeah, and they will come.
I've actually been hearing for 25 years that Marvel and DC don't do enough for women. Their response is always the same. We try and it doesn't work. Well, whether you believe them or not, I don't think they're going to change. Let's go back to Festus' point. Fine. If you think this is so important, find those creators and support their work, because guess what? They're all over the web now.
If I won the lottery.
Send Marvel and DC messages. Hey, I was going to spend, $50 on your, I won't say schlock, your finely crafted material. And instead, I went over here to this creator and I spent it on her stuff because I like it better. Mm. Like, vote with your feet. The other thing is that if you give them this energy of fighting them, that itself gives them more power.
Hey, I'll tell you what, guys, I think we're running out of time here.
Yep.
Maybe we should go ahead and wrap this up. I want to thank everybody for a lively and spirited discussion. That was great. Thanks to Alex Heberling of alexisguide.net, who left us earlier. Thank you to Typhon Blue of genderradic.com and Fess of Comics Web Beacon. Thank you so much.
Webcomic Beacon.
Webcomics Beacon. Of course, I'm on the show, so I don't know its name. Webcomics Beacon. And
Webcomic. It's singular. Yeah. Webcomic Beacon.
Webcomic Beacon. Webcomic Beacon. See y'all next week.